From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone, and thanks for listening to Korean Context, your source for all things Korea. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. I'm sure many of you have been following the various trade and tariff issues that have been going on around DC in the last few months. And if you have, you've probably heard of Section 232, which is a provision that will allow the Trump administration to put extra tariffs on certain goods based on a national security concern. The Trump administration has already used this for steel and aluminum, and they are now investigating whether to also apply 232 to the auto industry and use a national security reasoning to put tariffs on imported cars. So with this in mind, I wanted to get the perspective of people who are going to be directly affected by this. So we have two major Korean car company representatives here. First, we have David Kim, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs here at Hyundai's Washington, D.C. office. And then we have Christopher Wank, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs at Kia Motors Corporation's Washington office. So both of them obviously are following this issue very closely and know a lot about not only what it will mean for Kia and Hyundai, but what it will mean for the auto industry in general should the Commerce Department decide in the next couple of weeks to apply a Section 232 and allow the Trump administration to add tariffs on imported cars. So with that in mind, I want to get straight to the conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. So I really want to thank both of you for taking your time to talk to me. I know it's a really busy time. You're working through this issue, which is very complicated. And so I really appreciate taking some time out of your day to talk with our listeners about an important issue for Korea and for the United States. I want to start off first, for our listeners who may not know exactly what 232 is, can you give kind of the rundown of what is 232? And why President Trump might be using national security grounds, which we don't necessarily think of when it comes to trade. Why is he using this particular section to talk about trade policy?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Jenna, for having Christopher and me come down to KEI for this podcast. It's really great to be here, and so we really appreciate it. Section 232 is a part of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962. And this is a statute that gives the president wide authority to take action against imported products that are deemed to be a national securities threat. So under Section 232, if the relevant agency, and in this case it's the Department of Commerce, if Commerce determines that imported vehicles and auto parts pose a security threat, national security threat, the president then can impose tariffs or take other actions to restrict imports. So that's what's going on right now. Department of Commerce launched their investigation in late May, and it's still ongoing right now. I don't really want to speculate as to why the president is using 232 as the basis or grounds for tariffs, but I think the most important point is that all of us in the auto industry are firmly united in the belief that there is no national security threat as a result of imported vehicles and auto parts.
Jenna, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to come down here. David and I do appreciate this. And I'll just add that in terms of the 232 issue that we're talking about today, this has been used on other issues recently as well, as some of your listeners may be following. Last year, the Trump administration used this authority to look at imports of aluminum and imports of steel. So there is a precedent with this administration in terms of using this authority to look at imports of certain products from overseas. And as you know, there are tariffs on imports from several countries, imports of steel and aluminum. So this is something that this auto investigation follows what we just saw with steel and aluminum imports.
So following on to that, as you just said, we have seen this before in the last several months. So how do you see this affecting the auto industry now that that is being investigated? And, you know, for Korean automakers like Hyundai and Kia, how would this affect both of your companies?
Well, this is going to be a huge impact if indeed tariffs are imposed on autos and auto parts. Just staggering, really. When you talk about the potential price of a car, The Trade Partnership, which is a trade consulting firm in town, estimated that the average price increase would be about $6,400 on a $30,000 imported car. So that is huge. Price increases will lead to a reduction in sales, which will lead to a reduction in production, and ultimately job impact. So we can't even begin to explain how devastating this could be for our companies, Hyundai and Kia, and for the entire auto industry in the U.S. and for the economy for that matter.
Yeah, I just want to underscore a point that David just made. It's really important to highlight that there is complete opposition from the entire auto industry to what we're discussing right now. There is, you know, whether it's all of the OEMs, the international companies and the Detroit companies, all of the dealers, the Auto Care Aftercare Association. I want to point out that there was a letter that was sent to President Trump from the entire auto industry that was placed in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago. And the letter was sent from the Auto Alliance, from the American Automotive Policy Council, the Auto Care Association, the American International Automobile Dealers Association, Global Automakers, the National Automobile Dealers Association, and the Motor and Equipment Manufacturers Association. So those organizations represent the entire auto industry. And in this letter, I want to read one specific paragraph in here because I think it really highlights the opposition in the auto industry to what is being proposed here. It specifically says, raising tariffs on autos and auto parts would be a massive tax on consumers who buy or service their vehicles, whether imported or domestically produced. These higher costs will inevitably lead to declining sales and the loss of American jobs, as well as increasing vehicle service and repair costs that may result in consumers delaying critical vehicle maintenance. So this letter really does kind of, I think, underscore that, you know, there is strong opposition from the auto sector to this. No one is asking for any protection. No one in the auto industry is asking for this. So that's really important for people to understand.
Now, if I can go back to the job impact for a moment, the Peterson Institute for International Economics estimated that there would be 195,000 American jobs lost as a result of tariffs. It would be three times as many job losses if retaliatory tariffs were to take effect, and that would be very likely from other countries. Getting back to vehicle prices, 10% increase in overall production costs at our plant in Montgomery, Alabama. And so that, again, will lead to job loss impacts to the regional and local and national economy. The other thing I really want to point out is not just job impacts at Hyundai and Kia, but at the ports of entry where vehicles come in from Korea. Hyundai uses three ports on the West Coast, Port of Hueneme and National City, both in Southern California and Portland, Oregon, and then two ports on the Eastern Seaboard, Brunswick, Georgia, and Philadelphia. Jobs at those seaports would also be at risk under a tariff scenario.
Right, so this actually gets into my next question really well, which is that obviously you produce vehicles here in the United States, but then there's also different parts that are sourced from around the world as well. So can you talk a little bit about that in terms of just the global impact of possible tariffs on autos? And, you know, for Hyundai and Kia specifically, what is imported versus produced domestically or in different countries? Can you get into a little bit of that as well?
Well, it really depends on the model and trim line. So, for example, at our plant in Montgomery, Alabama, we produce the Sonata, Elantra, and Santa Fe. And within each of those three models, there are many different trim lines. So I'm just going off the top of my head. One of the Sonata models built in Montgomery, Alabama, is made up of roughly 44% U.S. content, 56% overseas, mostly from Korea. But again, that's just one model. It varies from trim line to trim line. But the reality is the supply chain is truly global, and parts come from all over the place, and that's to ensure high quality and lowest cost and to make sure that the manufacturing industry is competitive. And that's just the reality of how things work these days.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say, you know, I mean, it is a global supply chain. And I think for any auto company, I mean, you know, we are sourcing as much as we can domestically in the United States, but for a lot of the cars that we make. And for the case of Kia, we produce the Kia Optima and the Kia Sorento at our plant in West Point, Georgia, south of Atlanta. And for any auto company, though, when they're looking at supply chains, they're looking at quality, getting the best quality products, the quantity that they need, and also it comes down to price. So those are all factors that go into this. But the very heart of this 232 investigation is not only the potential putting tariffs on auto imports. It's also auto parts. And frankly, I think that that's part of the discussion that's getting lost in all of this, is that it's not just the cars that could be potentially facing higher costs coming to the United States, it's also the parts. And for, you know, for a lot of companies, including Hyundai and Kia, this will have a major impact on our ability to compete in the U.S.
And in fact, picking up on an earlier point you mentioned, Christopher, when it comes to routine maintenance, for those who are not even in the market to buy a new car, to service their car because of potential tariffs on parts, maintenance costs will also go up. So they're going to be paying a lot more just to maintain their vehicle.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because, I mean, I've been following this issue, you know, here at KEI. Obviously, this is a really big issue that we've been following. And I haven't heard that come up in the narrative as much. It's kind of this more 10,000 feet, you know, autos will cost more with tariffs. But that's a really good and important point, is even if you already have a Hyundai or a Kia car, like, you could face increased costs as well.
Yeah, and just to add on another part on parts, both Hyundai and Kia have developed this very robust automotive cluster in Alabama and Georgia, where we've got subsidiaries involved in parts production and manufacturing. So it's not just making vehicles, but it's making the parts as well. So as a result of all of these activities in the South, collectively, our companies have contributed to the vitality of the economy in the Southeast through economic activity and jobs as a result of manufacturing, both on the parts side as well as the vehicles themselves.
Yeah. I know we travel a lot to talk to people around the country about Korea issues. And every time we go to Atlanta, at the Atlanta airport, they have, I think, the millionth. Mm-hmm. Is it the millionth
Correct.
Kia
yes,
that
is.
Was manufactured?
Yep.
And they have it in the airports for everyone to see. So that's kind of cool. And we always show our Korean visitors, like, here's one of the cars that we've worked together to make. So. For those of you who are going to Atlanta, you can check that out. But I want to get into a little bit of some of the benefits that you've talked about already as far as jobs and, you know, putting things back into the local economies of places like Georgia, Alabama. What would you say are some of the benefits of producing domestically in the U.S. versus in Korea or in another country?
Well, I'll just jump in here. I mean, for Kia specifically, we've been in the U.S. for 26 years, and we've been manufacturing in Georgia since 2009. We are very vested and invested in the U.S. It's a critically important auto market. I think that's why you see 14 automakers producing cars in the United States, because it is such a large, important market. But, you know, specifically, I just want to say that you know, it's really important to highlight how much the auto industry in the United States has changed over the last 20 years. As a matter of fact, last year, almost half of the cars that are produced in the United States were produced by international auto companies, including Kia and Hyundai. So that's a pretty staggering statistic, I think. A lot of Americans probably don't realize. I personally grew up in Michigan, and so I certainly, you know, grew up very close to Ford and GM, and, you know, I think a lot of those companies. But, you know, a lot of the auto production, the jobs in the auto industry today are actually with international auto companies. And specifically for Kia, we decided to invest in West Point, Georgia. Let me tell you about West Point, Georgia. West Point, Georgia used to be a textile community. And over time, of course, the textile industry had a lot of changes. And frankly, a lot of those jobs and mills went out of business. And that's what happened to West Point. But let me just tell you that the impact that Kia has had on that community, I've seen for myself. And it is truly remarkable to see what has happened. Kia has given that community a lifeline again. There are hundreds and hundreds of jobs, not even at the plant, but around the community that depend on Kia being located in West Point, Georgia. And so we're very committed to being in the United States. We're doing a lot of good things at our plant in West Point, and we like to grow what we're doing there. But obviously, the things that we're talking about today would have an impact on our ability to do that down the road. So that's why we are so opposed to seeing any action taken that would make it more difficult for us to compete in the U.S.
You made a good point about what is, you know, the nature of a car. How do you determine if it's an American-made car or not? I have some friends and former coworkers who firmly believe deep down inside that they need to stick to the truly American brands, GM, Ford, Chrysler, and that's their preference, of course. That's their choice. But as you pointed out earlier, you know, what's an American-made car? Well, all of our cars are American-made. And in fact, in the auto industry, it is generally recognized that the most American-made car is a Toyota Camry because of their overall parts content. So we're all in that same category. We're all American-made cars. We may have international nameplates. Our parent companies may be somewhere else, but the bottom line is we are American-made cars, just as American as GM, Ford, the legacy brands in Detroit. The other thing I want to mention, one of our plant workers from Montgomery, Alabama, came up and testified at the recent Department of Commerce public hearing on the 232 investigation. And he made the point in his testimony that life before Hyundai arrived in 2005 was very different than what it is now. Back then, it was a struggling economy, high unemployment, and then Hyundai, and not just Hyundai, but auto parts manufacturers along in the Southeast along the I-85 corridor came in and completely transformed the economy of the Southeast. And so he spoke in a very personal and heartfelt way about what it has meant for him and his family to be a part of the auto industry in the Southeast. And it has completely changed his life and the lives of his coworkers. So we like to believe that as a result of our presence in Georgia and Alabama, we've made a difference in the economy and overall quality of life as well.
Following on to that, from what I understand, you also export American-produced vehicles to other markets as well. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
We export roughly 20% of vehicles made in Montgomery, Alabama, to a lot of different places, primarily Canada. But so we're talking 20%. The other point I want to make is a little over half of Hyundai vehicles sold in the U.S. are made in Alabama. And that's a fact we like to repeat over and over again. And those numbers will increase over time.
So for Kia, we don't export quite as much as Hyundai does. We export about 15% or so of our vehicles that are produced at our plant in West Point. But I can tell you that there's growing interest in finding new opportunities to export. And I know that that's something that they are very interested in exploring more, and we're trying to help them out. But I also say that 40% of the vehicles that are produced at our plant in West Point are sold in the United States.
Getting back to 232, if that comes into effect, how would that impact your business model, and what specific steps would you have to take to cope with that?
For example, we are planning to invest $2.5 billion to upgrade our facilities between now and 2021. But if tariffs take effect, all of that would have to be reevaluated, no question about it. And those are funds that would have created jobs, that would have helped advance more research and development in autonomous driving technology and things of that nature. But all of that would be looked at again.
I think the bottom line, you know, not just for Kia and Hyundai, but for all auto companies, this is a very difficult moment for the auto industry because there are so many challenges out there. And to add this potential complexity on top of everything, I mean, you know, we are invested in the United States, and we want to grow. We want to invest more. But if this does happen, it's going to make us have to have a change of course potentially. And we don't want to do that. We want to avoid that at all costs. You know, speaking anecdotally, the CEO of Toyota North America was recently quoted as saying that Toyota is looking at this, and they would consider not importing some of their models. And they obviously also have been talking a lot about how, you know, there would be additional costs passed on the consumer. So, I mean, that's just inevitable to the points that David raised earlier about the studies that have been done. Americans do not want to have to pay thousands of dollars more for cars. So we're going to see increased costs, and frankly, we're going to see less choices for consumers. And, you know, those are things that I don't think Americans want.
And one thing we didn't talk about yet is dealers. The dealer network would be hit really hard. We have 835 Hyundai dealerships around the country, and the total employment is roughly 47,000. If sales go down, their workforce will be impacted in a very substantial way.
So you mentioned the consumer choice. I really want to get into that too. I mean, how would an average family who's looking to buy a car, how would they be impacted by this?
Well, I mean, I think it could be pretty rough, to be honest with you. And, you know, I think that for most Americans, especially in the middle class, I think the Kias selling in the United States really are geared at middle class consumers. If you're talking about $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 more for a car, that will make it almost impossible for that consumer to potentially purchase that car. And so we want to make sure that we're continuing to build the highest quality products at the most competitive prices. And, you know, in some ways, this will tilt the playing field, not just against companies like Kia or Hyundai, but against consumers. And at the end of the day, you know, you look at the U.S. economy right now, it's doing pretty well. And I think that the growth that we're seeing is encouraging. But, you know, if we were to throw this into the mix right now, it would really be sending a mixed message, I think, to consumers, because there is more money in the economy. But, you know, for a lot of households, it's still tight. Money's tight. And when you think about costs that Americans have, of course, you know, purchasing a house is the most expensive thing. But second is cars. And so Americans are cost-conscious consumers. And we need to make sure that we're doing everything to keep costs as competitive as we can. I also wanted to add to the point that David just made. I think that the dealers would really, really be under enormous duress if this were to go through. For Kia, we've got 775 dealers across the United States, over 38,000 workers. So those are jobs that are at stake here as well. And so, again, you got, you know, the OEMs, you got Kia and Hyundai, but you got all the dealers who are trying to sell our cars. And so this is all tied together.
One thing that's not been talked about a whole lot is the used car market. And I give Peterson Institute a lot of credit for raising this in their study. The used car market would obviously face much higher demand. And we all know from basic economics that higher demand means higher price. So if folks are not going to buy a brand new Kia or Hyundai and instead turn to the used car market, that market is not immune to price increases as well as a result of tariffs. So you're going to see higher prices across the board, whether it's brand new or used vehicle.
Yeah, I'm glad we're getting into some of these things that, again, I don't think have come up in the general narrative that I've seen. So, like, no one being immune from facing the effects of this, even if you're only looking to buy a used car or looking to service your car. So that's really important to keep in mind as well. We've seen, and things are changing quickly, so who knows by the time this podcast comes out, but there were some discussions with the European Union, and they may be exempt from facing some of these things. Do you think South Korea should be exempted as well, even if 232 is put into effect in the auto industry, and why do you think that?
Well, Korea is in a very unique situation for a couple reasons. One, the longstanding U.S.-Korea security relationship. It's been in existence for 65 years now, and clearly both countries are joined at the hip. They have a common interest in terms of making sure North Korea's nuclear ambitions are held at bay. And so clearly that's a really important security strategic relationship. And the second thing, of course, is CORUS FTA. The free trade agreement was modified just a few months ago. An agreement in principle was reached. And that agreement, for all intents and purposes, puts to rest all of the outstanding issues in terms of the bilateral trade agreement. And the Trump administration has touted its benefits in terms of leveling the playing field, increasing market access in Korea for U.S. automobiles. And so on those two grounds alone, Korea and our companies, Kia and Hyundai, are very uniquely positioned.
I mean, I would just simply add that, you know, over the course of the past year, as these trade issues have come up, the Korean government, you know, I would say has been probably just about the most forward-leaning in terms of working with the Trump administration about different issues. You know, David mentioned the CORUS agreement. Obviously, auto trade has been part of the CORUS agreement. Of course, that was first reached by the Bush 43 administration, and then that came into effect under Obama. But it is important to recognize that there is a trading relationship that exists between the U.S. and Korea that is overseen by this trade agreement. And the changes that were made were changes that the Trump administration asked for, and the Korean government, working with stakeholders, did make those changes. And so that is something that does make the U.S.-Korea relationship, I think, unique in the case of this 232 issue.
And many of your listeners probably already know this, but in case they don't, just to remind people, Korea's tariff on vehicles from the U.S. is zero. It used to be 8%, and it ramped down over time and was completely phased out several years ago.
All right. So we could probably talk about this all day, and I'm sure you guys do. But is there anything else that you think is really important to highlight before we sign off?
Yeah, I just want to make the point that not only are we manufacturing vehicles and parts in the Southeast, but as a result of all this activity, our companies are literally woven into the fabric of local communities where we have a presence through our various CSR activities, sponsorship of nonprofit organizations and events and activities. We are very much an integral part of cities and towns all across America. But all of that is at risk under a tariff scenario.
Well, it's, you know, this podcast is very timely. It's very important. This is a critically important issue for the auto industry. And, you know, I think for Kia, we've been committed to the U.S. for over 25 years, and we want to continue to be committed. This is a bump in the road, but it's a big bump in the road. And, you know, it's important that your listeners are doing what they can to take a look at this. And, you know, I think that it's really important that policymakers at the federal level and the state level are aware that this would have an impact on jobs in local communities. And so that's something that we're doing on a regular basis, is engaging with stakeholders that have any relevance in this discussion. So that's really important. So, again, thank you for the opportunity today.
All right, great. I want to thank you both again for your time and for educating our listeners a little bit about this really vital issue that we're, again, facing. In just the next few weeks, we may know how things are going to move forward. So thank you very much for stopping by.
All right. Thanks, Jenna.
Thank you, Jenna.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of Korean Context. We will be following this and lots of other Korea-related issues really closely, so please do check out our website, www.kiaa.org, to see more. Thank you.